Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We now know when we'll be spending 40 years playing Starfield. Microsoft has shown off its E3 garter, and you can throw all your Nintendo Switch games directly in the bin. This is VGC, a video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Chris Scullion, and Stacey Henley. How are we doing, folks? This is the most northerly video game podcast of all time, and I'm thrilled about it.
Yeah, doing well.
Same. I'm absolutely delighted.
I mean, I feel like people who have listened to the previous two episodes will hear some of these accents and perhaps be somewhat scared, but you know what? We have to be the difference we want to see in the games industry. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. I'm happy to finally be coming off the subs bench and making my VGC podcast debut. Like is Solskjaer still a reference? But I don't watch English football, so my English football references are at least 20 years old. So is he still a super sub, or is he now a bad manager? Is that what people think now?
I don't know. I feel like Solskjaer is a player that people know because of like Ultimate Team and because of him being a shit manager. I don't think people think of Man United winning the treble anymore.
Yeah,
it's
depressing. In my head, he's still a super sub. But that aside, old references aside, I'm glad to finally be making my debut.
I mean, you adorn that horrifying cover art, so I think revealing to people the man behind the mask is important.
True enough. Sad thing is, I approved that as well.
How are you, Stacey?
Fine, yeah, doing well. Excited to be here. I feel it's really rare that I'm in a conversation with people from the games industry, and I feel like I'm a southerner, but
yeah, exactly.
After the day.
Before we get into any cross Scotland slander, it's a bit of a heavy news show this week. The games have retired for a few weeks, but there are some big hitters coming, but we can't talk about them yet, or we'll get arrested because we love them embargoes. Let's get into the headlines. Number one, Starfield release date delayed until September, showcase scheduled for June. Starfield's release date has been delayed into the second half of the year. In an announcement video published on Wednesday, Bethesda confirmed that the game, which was initially planned to release in the first half of the year, will now arrive on September 6th. The publisher also confirmed a Starfield Direct will take place on June 11th. Microsoft has also confirmed that the Xbox Game Showcase will take place just before that, but we'll talk about that later. Starfield was originally supposed to release November 11th, 2022, but in May of 2022, the game was delayed until 2023. And then an entry on the official Bethesda support page noted that the game was scheduled for the first half of 2023, meaning that this move to September is another delay and breaks the promise of last year's Xbox Game Showcase, where they said everything we're shown can be played within the next 12 months. Stacey, I come to you. What's the vibe on Starfield?
I still think people are going to be looking forward to it. Obviously, it's Xbox's big hitter. It is a delay, technically, with that Xbox promise, but, you know, it's not like there was a date and it's been pushed back. We didn't know the date, and now we know the date, so I think people will treat that as good news, whereas, obviously, when it gets pushed back from November, there's the disappointment of we're not getting it. And I think a lot of people probably just weren't aware of what was on the Bethesda support page. This is going to be a game that a lot of more casual players are going to play. It's going to be one of the biggest sellers of the year. So moving it out of a time when, you know, Zelda's going to be coming out, it's going to be another big game that a lot of people are going to want to play. I think releasing in September is smart, even if it's technically a delay.
Chris, what about yourself? How did this hit you? I mean, it's not surprising. I don't think anyone was really expecting it to drop in like April or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, on a personal level, it hit me like a feather because I've got zero interest in Starfield at all. But I appreciate I'm in the minority there in terms of Xbox owners. It's just I'm an old man now and I don't have time to games that long just intimidate me. Like I've never played an Elder Scrolls game, I've never played a Fallout game, so I just get nervous. I'm a collector, so when a game's got a lot of stuff, I just get put off. But certainly as Microsoft's big kind of game of this year, then it's an interesting one. I mean, obviously, when E3 comes and they'll have their big kind of presentation, whatever form that takes, they'll obviously then be focusing a bit on Starfield, you would think, even though they've got their separate thing announced. And that, to me, is the more kind of disappointing thing, because as long as they keep Starfield out of it too much, I want to see new stuff at this conference.
I do wonder if they're getting the Starfield Direct out there, if it's like an hour and it's just like, here is a big chunk of gameplay, here's a significant side quest, so that this second show can just be Avowed and Hellblade 2, and we'll come to what we think might be there later. But yeah, this is an interesting one, because at the back end of last year, I had a conversation with someone in the Xbox team, pretty as high up as you can be, and it certainly seemed that this wasn't Bill Gates. I was talking to Bill and Melinda, was having dinner with them, and it was a tense vibe. But
I can imagine
they were basically saying that the date was always in flux. It was always on Bethesda, read on Todd Howard, to come to Xbox and say, right, let's do this, because Xbox is acutely aware that they cannot cyberpunk this. Like, this cannot happen again, especially with the Bethesda kind of reputation for how fucked their games can generally be at launch. Fallout 4, Skyrim and Fallout 3 were also fucked, but that was in an era where you could kind of get away with it. You couldn't get away with it now. And the Twitter era, if Starfield's really buggy, it would be a disaster. And I still feel like there will be people smelling blood in the water and going into Starfield being right, I need to be the first one to have this hilarious bug video where the head spins around. But I just think it's probably a good thing. And I think the unsaid thing here is, I think this has almost certainly moved Spider-Man. What do you think about that, Stacey?
Yeah, I think Sony's pretty smart. Sony tends to not just release games that do well, people like, but they dominate the conversation for a long time. Sony has a few releases in the year that are really big ones. 2020 was probably the last time they had a big chain of that, Final Fantasy, then The Last of Us, and Ghost of Tsushima. Obviously, delays and things have disrupted that strategy, but Sony knows when it releases a game, it's a big talking point. And I think it would be silly to take on Starfield, even though it might win, it might end up being, hey, Xbox thing isn't being talked about. It feels, when Sony's so far in front on terms of exclusives and people caring about the console and talking about their big games, it would be silly to risk that against Starfield when you can just dominate October.
Yeah, it certainly feels like, I've always thought that because this new Spider-Verse film is coming out, that will probably come with a trailer with Born to Spider-Man 2. There's all the talk of the PlayStation Showcase, which almost certainly is where we get the date. I can see this coming out in kind of the same time God of War did last year. November means it's the big Christmas game. You do a big PS5 bundle with it. But yeah, I bet you that game gets internally delayed, not because it's not ready, because it's Insomniac, I assume it's already ready to go, like they could send it out now, but just to get away from Starfield, the same reason you don't release against Zelda, because that is going to be the thing, at least for a while. Chris, just thinking about the back half of this year, what games are jazzing you? Like, and you're not a Starfield guy, you don't strike me as particularly a Spider-Man guy, Nintendo has no more games, so
not a lot, to be honest. I mean, but that doesn't mean I'm doom and gloom about the end of the year. I just think there's going to be a lot of stuff that we maybe don't know about yet, because we're still quite early into this year. I think we're going to see a lot of stuff, and it's like, oh, and it's out in 6 months' time. My hope is that COVID has kind of taught publishers not to announce release dates until they're a bit closer, just in case, because you never know. So I'm hoping that in the coming months we'll start finding out the new stuff. Because Forza won't be till next year, is that right? Or is that Forza?
If that's this year,
then that's my big one. That's the one I'm looking forward to. I'm not a massive petrol head by any means, but something about that series just kind of strikes me the right way, so that's the one I'm really looking forward to. I think.
Do you wish it was another Horizon? Or are you ready to get back to kind of trad Forza?
No, I'm ready. Like Horizon, I got Edinburgh. Last Horizon, I'm happy. Unless Horizon does something wildly different, like the Japan one that was rumored for 5 and didn't end up happening. I'm over the countryside type thing, and I'm keen just to get a proper motorsport game again, that in FIFA, obviously. Oh, sorry, I can't say FIFA anymore. That in EA Sports Football Club,
EA Sports FC.
I'm curious to see what happens there. Because my review in FIFA, I basically said that I felt like they were holding back because obviously they want EA Sports FC 24 to hit the ground running, and so I think they'll be kind of holding big features back for that.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
More about that later. But Stacey, what about you back half of this year? Is there anything you have your eye on, or is it just play it how it lands with these kind of, in this era of surprises and the hi-fi rushes of the world?
Yeah. It depends, because a lot of the big games that I'm looking forward to don't have release dates and could very easily be 2024. Obviously, I'm very, very sure, because of Insomniac, Spider-Man will be one of them. I think Spider-Man was probably the most fun, enjoyable game on the PS4. I wouldn't think the best,
no.
You know, against The Last of Us and Red Dead Redemption and things like that, but just to play for like 15 minutes. So really looking forward to Spider-Man 2. Hellblade, we've just mentioned, the first game was really short. The second game's going to be longer. Does that mean it's going to be better? Does that mean it's going to kind of lose its identity? Hades 2 could be here back end of this year. That so there's a lot of stuff that could come out, but I wouldn't be surprised if Hades 2 was 2024.
And of course, Hades 2, again, an early access, so it's not like you're getting the full whack. Although, and trust in Supergiant, there is no game that I'm more sure is going to be at least very good than that. But you never know, Microsoft might have more. As we go into our second story, Microsoft E3 plans have been revealed. There's going to be an Xbox Game Studios showcase on the same date as the Starfield one, June 11th. It's a Sunday. It's classic E3. Now, I want both of you, starting with Chris, to give me a conservative prediction and a wild card prediction.
When you say conservative, you don't mean like anything about people on boats or anything. You mean like just in terms of just like just
Phil Spencer's going to stand behind a lectern that says we have to stop the boats. He's going to take food out of the mouths of impoverished people, and then he's going to announce a new Banjo-Kazooie.
Well, that's what I had written down. the boats, not Banjo-Kazooie. My conservative prediction is a quite boring one, I'm afraid, but I think Ubisoft Plus will finally be added to Game Pass Ultimate, because that's been more than a year now since Ubisoft said that Ubisoft Plus was coming to Xbox in general, and to the best of my knowledge, it hasn't yet.
The logo's in the back end, it has been for months and months.
It's been there for ages. And I don't know if Sony's done an exclusivity deal, because obviously there's Ubisoft stuff on PlayStation Plus Premium now, and I don't know if there's been some kind of deal done where they say don't bring it to Xbox for X amount of time. So my guess is that Ubisoft Plus will be added to Game Pass Ultimate, and that Game Pass Friends and Family will be spread out to the larger regions, because it's doing the rounds now in like Ireland and Colombia, and they added it to a few kind of other kind of smaller regions recently. I think they'll roll that out properly, and that'll be the big, next big push for Xbox Game Pass.
And your wild card one.
Well, wild card is 1 vs 100.
Finally,
the return. Because Phil Spencer's been hinting at it and teasing at it for a while, and late last year they did an Xbox FanFest trivia event where people subscribed to FanFest could log on and take part in an Xbox quiz, which I took part in as well, because I was like, fine, let's try it. And it was really well put together, and I felt like this has been a hell of a lot of work just for a kind of a limited availability thing just for a bunch of Xbox fans. This feels like a test run for something, for like a quiz engine, because it worked really well. It worked quite seamlessly. So I get the feeling that 1 vs 100 might be coming back.
Yeah, and Jeff Grubb has said as much. Like last year, he said that as far as he was aware, that was happening. And much like the Metroid Prime remaster, eventually the Grub Man cometh and it does happen. So exactly. I would expect that to be great. 1 vs 100. It's crazy that they never did it in the era of HQ trivia or in the pandemic. Like, Surely, yeah, when everyone's like locked in their house, wouldn't that be the perfect place to do it?
That would be the perfect time to do it. But I'll any time's the perfect time for one versus 100. I'm cannot wait for it. Yeah, I'll be glued to my telly. Yeah, exactly.
Stacey, your conservative prediction and your wild card for the Microsoft show.
I mean, conservative prediction was going to be talking more about Hellblade, but I feel like I already have. So what I think we are really due information on is Perfect Dark. Mm-hmm. That was revealed a long time ago. We just kind of saw a CGI trailer of a corridor and haven't really heard anything of it since. I don't expect, you know, a Hi-Fi Rush style shadow drop, but more gameplay, maybe it's a release window for 2024, even 2025, early 2025. I don't know how big it is, really what their ambition for the game is. It feels like we know nothing about it, and it doesn't feel as important a franchise to a lot of people as it does to me. I played as a kid, and I think, you know, you have that connection that you play to games as a kid, but I'm going to say this and get lots of angry emails, but I thought it was better than GoldenEye. I thought it did the GoldenEye thing better than GoldenEye. And I'm surprised that GoldenEye has remained this beloved game. It's just been brought back out. People still talk about it as an all-time great, and yet Perfect Dark never even gets a mention. And I know GoldenEye has the James Bond link, but the fact that they're making a new one and they're saying so little about it, I would like to see it then. I just feel it's due.
Chris, as the resident old man, what do you think of that Perfect Dark versus GoldenEye? Where do you come down?
I agree with Stacey. I think fundamentally Perfect Dark's a better game. I don't know if the reason GoldenEye is the one people think fondly of is because Perfect Dark needed the expansion pack to properly unlock everything on N64, and not a lot of people had that. So I think just more people had GoldenEye, and that's probably why everyone talks about it more. But Perfect Dark definitely was, in my eyes at least, the better game. So yeah, I agreed. I'm curious to see if we're going to get another, if it's going to lean more towards Rare quality or more towards Perfect Dark Zero quality. So that'll be interesting.
An early 360
vintage launch game.
Yeah. And your wild card prediction, Stacey?
Obviously, the Activision whole thing isn't through yet, so that probably puts a dampener on this. But since it's a wild card, I would love to see them push. So much of the Activision talk has been Call of Duty getting across the line, and I would love to see them push one of the smaller things, like, it's been hinted at for a long time there's going to be a new Spyro. There was hints in the Crash game. There was hints in the Crash art book. There was been, like, weird tweets before the Game Awards and then no announcement. And I've always kind of wondered, why are they kind of building up to nothing? So I would love to see them do a new Spyro, really, in the way they obviously brought back the Crash trilogy and then they rebooted the whole thing with Crash 4. I would like to see them do something similar and essentially make a Spyro 4 that starts after Reignited.
I mean, with that one, you do assume that they probably are going to do that, like, the second they can legally can. Like, whatever the big show is following that, they're like, okay, we're doing Spyro. Please fucking God, they're going to come out and say, we're going to get the team to do Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Which would get VGC's first ever 6-star. which clears the way for them to eventually do the Thug remakes, get Bam Margera back. It would be perfect. You've got to double down on that stuff, mainly to make people feel better about this very weird deal. Like, to a big section of the game playing audience, at least the hardcores, Call of Duty is like, oh, that's fucking Call of Duty. But if you can be like, we're doing more Spyro, that Crash 4 was, I'm famously an anti-Crash person, but was that Crash 4 received well? Were people into it? Did people think it was what they were wanting?
The big problem with that was it was so tailored to the hardcore. Like, 100% of the three of the main trilogy, like 107% or whatever the DAF number was. But they made Crash 4 kind of for that kind of player. The levels were so much longer. You had to beat them on the hardest difficulty, which Crash did usually have difficulty levels, but had to beat it on, like, a harder difficulty and without dying. And for to get one of the color gems, you have to go through an entire level, which takes about 8 minutes without breaking a single box. And just, like, lots of things like that where that would be a fun challenge in a small dose, but every level was designed as the hardest challenge possible. So I think people generally liked the game, not as much the other characters. And the playing as Dingodile wasn't as good as that probably people would have imagined in their own heads, getting to play as Dingodile. But I think in general it was well received. I don't think it sold anywhere near as well as the trilogy. And then we all know what happened. The folding of Call of Duty, there was the what's it called now, Team Rumble. Originally Wumba League. So it kind of disintegrated after that, and it seemed like the chances of Spyro died with that, but hopefully, as you say, bringing, instead of just focusing on Call of Duty, which makes the most money, this deal might be the silver lining of they're going to be focusing on the smaller games as well.
Did we bring back Guitar Hero?
Oh my god. See, right, here's the thing. Bring back Guitar Hero is the one that people have like the hearts and minds. Rock please, Band please was don't. Always better. Rock Band was always better. It had better instruments, better fucking songs. It had a better progression. But Guitar Hero is the one that you say to people. Mind when you had Guitar Hero on the Wii? Guitar Hero 3 on the Wii was like a ridiculous phenomenon. Mm. I would love the return. Fucking DJ Hero.
That is exactly what I was just about to say. I've got my DJ Hero decks behind me still to this day, and like, what a game.
We are sad bastards. Why do we hold on to this stuff that will outlive us?
I've got my bootleg DJ Hero soundtrack on my iPad. iPod best.
Do you have the black and gold, the Eminem and Jay-Z one?
Do you know what I did? And I played it too much and got broke, so I had to go to CX and buy like a standard one like, to replace it when I was gutted. I played it that much, I went through two sets of cheap plastic decks.
Weirdly, the last time they brought Guitar Hero back for Guitar Hero Live, it was weirdly ahead of its time with the whole you played it like there was like streaming channels you subscribed to and things like that. But as someone who still has Rock Band 4 instruments and protects them with my life because they are so expensive to get replacement ones now, I have like 2,000 songs of DLC on Rock Band 4. I'd love music games to come back. My conservative prediction is that we get a lot of Avowed gameplay and we get a general 2024 release date for it, because I just think that's going to be their next thing. Here's my wild card one. I think that they make the play to be the home of EAFC for the next few years, in the same way that PlayStation has been for the last, say, since it's like FIFA 15 or 16 it transitioned over, and now the key thing is it's where EA chooses to hold their esports on what platform, because PlayStation is their like esports platform for FIFA at the moment, but in the Xbox 360 era, FIFA was aligned with Xbox. You could only get Legends on Xbox, things like that.
That's right.
This is the best opportunity they've had to maybe swing that, but I don't know. My other one was going to be we won't see Fable, but I don't want to wind people up, so
are we going to get Scalebound?
No.
Yeah, I think so.
That would be a wild card.
If we get Scalebound, it will be a logo and the game will never come out again.
I don't mean like Scalebound, and it's out today, Hi-Fi Rush, but I mean it's like, because 2020, Phil Spencer, I've got it written down. I said, Phil Spencer said, and I quote, this is journalism, folks. Michael this is how Cole. Journalism works. It says, and I quote, for the people out there thinking that maybe there's still something in the works, there's not. And then last year, he just said, there's currently nothing to say about Scalebound. That to me is an upgrade over hell no to nothing to say.
Phil Spencer must hate us for just ripping apart these tiny wee words and being like, no, that's...
Busted
that,
wide open. We're on to you, Phil.
That can tell us...
I'd say no and said this means it actually is coming.
Yeah, this game that originally already looked absolute dog shit, like, is coming back. But we actually have some listener mail from Nathan Zur, who writes in, just like you can, to podcast@videogameschronicle.com and asks... Loving the show so far and keen for Chris to make his debut this episode. This is clearly...
Let's face it, he's already stopped listening.
Off to a bad start. My question is, what do you think the public's perspective of Xbox will be at the end of the year with games like Starfield, Redfall, Forza releasing? I assume it'll be positive, but it probably hinges on whether Starfield is good or not. I will answer this diplomatically as Xbox's number one defender. I think if Redfall is like... Firstly, I don't think many people will actually care about Redfall outside of our bubble, because it's an Arcane game, and Arcane games are doomed to sell 10 copies to games journalists. Forza, I bet that's brilliant. I bet that ends up being one of the highest rated games of the year, Metacritic-wise, because it's just like, look at these fucking cars. They drive so well.
Yeah. Starfield, no coffee shops in it at all.
No coffee shops. No fucking 40 minutes about the history of the combustion engine. Starfield's the one, because the meme readout on Starfield is going to determine whether or not Xbox has a good year. If it comes out, it's brilliant. Wee bit buggy, but you know, it's buggy in the way that every massive open world game is buggy, but it's also fucking brilliant. It's getting these amazing scores, all the press are really loving it. Then I think that gives Xbox a lot of momentum, because that is their first biggie. Especially if, say, Spider-Man comes out and it does well, but a lot of the criticism is like, yeah, it's good, but it's a lot. It's kind of a lot like the first one, where Starfield's this like, whoa, that's next generation. On conversely, if it comes out and it's a wee bit fucked, and Xbox fans just get battered in every comment section with "lol Starfield" and like arms flailing around, like, then I think they're doomed to 1,000 more years of being kind of being down on their luck. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I agree. This can be another Halo, basically. Yeah, exactly. If that happens twice in a row, I do think the general perception of Xbox will be better by the end of the year, because the overriding lol meme has been Xbox has no games, and not even Hi-Fi Rush seems to have changed that, even though that's a certified good game. I think by the end of the year, if you can point at Starfield, if you can point at Forza, if you can point at a few other things and say, look, it will, Phil Spencer says there are some other GoldenEye style surprises coming, which presumably means like really badly optimized retro games. As long as I think by the end of the year, people, the Xbox defenders will be able to say, well, we don't have no games, we've got boop, 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 boop. And that can help perception quite
a lot. And here's
what's
coming in 24. We've got this extra shit that's been announced. And even stuff like Hellblade, because Hellblade's going to come out. No Kant will play it, probably, but it'll get amazing reviews, and it'll be like this kind of here's their arty game, because I've not really had one of those in a while. Like, the dominoes are about to fall down, and then the fucking Microsoft Activision deal falls apart, and then Xbox gets sold off. And
That to me is more crucial than what's coming out this year, is the deal, the Activision deal coming together, and what's going to be announced during the E3 period, because we know about Avowed, and we know that Fable's coming in 2037. We know these games are on the way. It's what we don't know that's going to swing things, I think, and Activision deal being done.
Now, Stacey, as a fellow Geordie, just like Jim Ryan, how do you think Xbox's end of the year is going to be?
I've got to be honest, I agree with what Chris said before about Starfield is not the Xbox game that I'm looking forward to. I will play it. I will prefer, I assume, you know, if they're as good as I expect them to be, Redfall, Hellblade, and Forza. None of those games matter. I think if Starfield does well, Xbox has a good year. Doesn't matter if Forza is terrible. Doesn't matter if they only have one game, because as we've just said, Hi-Fi Rush reviewed really well, people loved it. Still no one cares. Yeah. They need a game on the level of God of War or The Last of Us or Ghost of Tsushima. They need some... Starfield needs to really be Elden Ring, Starfield. We need to all agree that that's the order of games for this generation, because Sony hasn't been fully firing because of delays with the pandemic. People, much like Spider-Man, people said God of War was just kind of the first one, but bigger. Mm-hmm. Sony has made its business exclusives, and it has not really delivered on that this gen.
Interesting.
And if Xbox can show them up with Starfield, then that's a big win. It can't show them up with, doesn't matter how good Redfield is, that won't be a big exclusive that sells an Xbox. Starfield will.
Starfield's like the game on the bus. That's the game that's like gets like adverts during the Champions League and shit like that. All they need to do is be like the new game from the guys that like Skyrim, and that should be enough. But I think that's an interesting point about you thinking Sony's not delivering, because I think you would specifically with God of War, that seemed like a real turning point in terms of PlayStation 5's really getting out there in terms of like penetration to the market, and you saw a lot of God of War kind of in the lead up to Christmas. But I do wonder, because Sony hasn't had Ratchet as PS5 exclusive and my dearly beloved Returnal as PS5 exclusive, but they've not had one of their big like platinum tier studios put out just a PS5 game. So I'm interested to see, like, Spider-Man 2, you'd think.
That would be the big one,
That has to have, like, not just Manhattan, but it also has to have, like, the boroughs around New York. It has to have all these things that are like, fuck me, you could never do this on PS4. And then, eventually, you get whatever Naughty Dog are doing, but that'll be way down the line. Get whatever Bluepoint are doing. But it's going to be an interesting end of the year for Microsoft.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It might not be an interesting end of the year for EA because they're all going to jail. An Austrian court has said
allegedly.
An Austrian court has said that FIFA packs constitute gambling, orders PlayStation refunds. A court in Austria has ruled that FIFA Ultimate Team packs are a form of gambling and has ordered PlayStation maker Sony to issue refunds. According to Games Wirtschaft, I'll say, a small court in the district of Hermagor found in favour of several Austrian FIFA players who sued Sony in 2020. The suit alleged that plaintiffs, including one minor, had gambled away over €400 on the football simulator. The suit, which was brought forward, claimed that the ability to spend money on FIFA's random pack system violates the country's gambling act because while you're always getting essentially the same amount of items, the value of those items fluctuate against real life value, thus constituting gambling. Sony's been ordered to repay €338, and they have thus far ignored the ruling. So I'm not really interested in this because, frankly, if you've only spent €400 on Ultimate Team, that's small fry. Come on now. I used to spend like my entire SAS, like student loan, on Ultimate Team.
Never spent a penny on it.
I bet your team's absolutely clapped. You should see my team. My team's incredible.
Legends as far as the eye can see.
The front line is like, I've got Garincha on one side, I've got Voller, Hero, and then I've got Anthony Martial's 90 rated card. This is money. This is pure money. I'm more interested. What stage are we at in the loot box era, Stacey? Do these rulings ever make it to the UK? What's going on here?
Ultimate Team has always really surprised me because I play FIFA every year, have since I was a kid, no, 99 or 2000 or something like that. But I don't play Ultimate Team at all. I don't even play like Chris West. Like, I do my team for free. Like, when I was at school, I used to play a little bit with like a little bit of money, ask parents for stuff. But I've always been really happy with the career mode and, you know, playing online as these players. So if I played a lot, I maybe you can explain, because I know you do play. I don't understand the idea of buying money, building up a team. That all makes sense. Then the next version of the game, which we know is the same game, mm-hmm. comes out and your team goes away. You start from zero. So I don't know how this system has ever kind of been celebrated as much by the players, because I understand in other games, in battle passes, you know, playing to unlock skins, unlocking guns, mm-hmm. sometimes those guns get folded and stuff, but generally you still kind of own them, whereas in FIFA you pay so much for the squad and it kind of goes away from you. So I feel like it's more likely that players' patience runs out, especially as they're being forced to change to EA Sports Football Club. They have changed all the branding, they might have changed the name from Ultimate Team. I don't really know what the copyright and trademark is on that. I think it's more likely that players get bored of this and the company is forced to shift to a different way of making money, as we've seen with other online shooters with battle passes and subscriptions. And I know Overwatch has like a almost like a club you can join to pay instead of having to buy these loot boxes all the time. So I think that's more likely than a legal ruling in the UK that says you can't buy these packs, because the UK government used to use video games as a bit of a culture war easy win. Yeah. And as we've discussed, they've moved on to people in boats and other sorts of things now. So I don't think the legislation is going to be there, because Britain's government is falling apart and doesn't care about video games. It's not going to be a priority.
It's quite far down the queue. Just to explain like the Ultimate Team sickness, because like I put in like 500 to 700 hours each year on FIFA, and that is almost exclusively playing Ultimate Team. And yes, at the end of the year, while you still have your cards until they take the game offline, which they are current. The last one they did was like FIFA 17, so that kind of lets you know how long these cards. But no one's playing the game after the new one comes out, so your cards are essentially useless. They've really gotten brazen this year with the kind of packs they're offering. So traditionally, for the past 10 years, the absolute most they would charge for a pack is 2,000 FIFA points, which roughly translates to £20. Now, this year, they have gone almost double that. They're offering these super limited time packs. The amount of promo packs is constant. The amount of new players is constant. They're also offering a lot more rewards in-game that are untradeable, essentially meaning you'll open the pack and you cannot sell that on the virtual market for coins, trying to drain people of coins, which means I've got no coins to buy packs or build SBCs. I'll stick in a fiver and I'll open this promo pack and repeat the cycle. To your point, FIFA players fucking hate FIFA. Ultimate Team players fucking hate Ultimate Team. The gameplay is terrible. They use the same players every fucking year. It's... The amount of money that Ultimate Team makes, it should be the greatest online experience of all time, but it's just shit. But it's the only game in town. Like, people are not willing to transfer over to eFootball. I played a bit of eFootball. I'm sure Chris is ready to dive in with the eFootball defense in a minute, but but FIFA is FIFA. Ultimate Team is Ultimate Team. Like, the dopamine of opening those packs and watching people open packs and getting icons and stuff like that, it still hits me, and I'm like nearly 28. I've been playing Ultimate Team since I was like 15.
I guess that's just what I don't get, because I play hundreds of hours of FIFA every year, but I play if I want to play as Kevin De Bruyne or whatever, then I just pick Man City for my online team. Yeah. You know, like I go, obviously each year you start down the division, I kind of go up to like division 3 or 4 in the online and usually kind of stay there. So I kind of play people who are... as soon as I hammer them, as soon as I get hammered, it feels like a usual online experience, but I'm City for a little while, then I play as Chelsea, then I play as Real Madrid or Bayern, or I drop down and play as someone like Villa, so you're playing with like worse players and ideally get matched against people who want PSG. Like, I get it. I get the thing of FIFA is, I guess, the Ultimate Team has never really gripped me the way it has other people, so it always kind of confused me to have people. I know the legends aren't in the base game, but this, the excitement over like, oh, I've got Messi, like, yeah, so I'm playing as PSG.
I suppose it's just like it's like showing off your edict, like, look at the amount of coins I have, look at how good my team is, like, oh, look how good my pack luck has been. And also, Ultimate Team plays differently from regular seasons. Like, I think it was found that it's like 1.5 times faster, so it's meant to feel fucking arcadey, like your players are pinging all over the place. And also there is like a weird, you know, you play career mode, you build up your team and you're like, oh, I remember when I transferred him in, makes my team better, you can feel the progression. There's something about that in Ultimate Team, like, but it's just, I wonder if I just play it because I've been playing it since I was a teenager and I love football and it's like the football game, so I just continue to play it.
This is what I mean about when the name changes over. Will people still go back to these kind of paying £40 for a pack of cards when they're not Ultimate Team cards? They're EA Football Club 24 cards and they look different. That's my kind of, not worry because I don't care if it happens, but that's my take on will loot boxes go away.
I bet you EA owns the Ultimate Team branding, and or if they don't, they're like fighting for their absolute life to make sure.
I think Madden has it as well. So yeah,
they definitely own Ultimate Team. So it'll be like, instead of being FUT, which is what they always, well, they can still call it FUT. It could be
FUT.
FCUT. This I was going to say this season, but I suppose that's what it is. This season, I decided to not play FIFA and take a break from it and did eFootball instead, and it has the complete opposite problem from FIFA at the moment, which is that it's too eager to give out good stuff. Like, Konami gave me a code for like 40 or 50 quid's worth of currency and I can't spend it. I can't find ways to spend it because I've maybe spent like £20 worth and I've got a 99 Ronaldo, a 99 Messi, a 99 Neymar. I've got legends coming out my arse. I've got like the entire Celtic squad, which to be fair didn't cost that much. It's like part of the reason for that is that every time I log on, there's an apology notice comes up for something, and like, sorry, here's something else that's broken now. Here's loads of currency, and then I go, okay, play it the next day. Oh, yeah, sorry about this. Now here's I'm swimming, and so the problem is when you play e-football just now, everyone's got the best players, and it's boring for the other reasons. So I'm playing no football games just now. I can't play FIFA now because I'm so far behind. You know what FIFA's like? If you don't play it for 2 months, you can't. Your team falls so far behind that you can't play the kind of timed objectives, and that's you. You're out of the loop.
The power curve is so extreme that like basically it gets higher and higher and higher. Then team of the season hits for like 3 months, and that's like a decent time to come back because they like throw out cards at you, but I'm like, when I'm reviewing these massive games, I'm still chucking FIFA on for an hour to make sure I go in and like do my objectives and do my SBCs so I can keep my team up till it. Because I play the weekend league, like the kind of esports mode. I'm fucking shit at it, but like I still play it because it's like it's my one competitive, apart from Warzone, my one competitive thing now. But yeah, I know what you mean about eFootball because I also got some currency and they were doing like a thing where you could get like Nakamura or something like that. It was some legend that I wanted, and I just went in and it was like with all these like, here's your platinum golden ball, it gets you a guaranteed Pele, like all this shit. So, like,
that was quite easy. in terms of the loot box thing, I would love to see something done about it in the UK, but it won't. And as a parent of a 4-year-old, you can go to your toy shop of choice and the shelves are full of LOL Surprise and all these Disney things and eggs with like mystery characters in them. And it's like the world is just loot boxes now, and it's infuriating, especially as a parent, because like the kid wants the collection of this and that. And there's these new Disney 100 ones they've just brought out, and they're 15 quid each because it's like a wee mini, like, it's a big massive egg thing, and you open it and it's like a wee stand and the character and wee, so it's like a proper wee figure, but there's like 20 of them and they're 50 quid each, and it's like it'd be bad enough spending £300 on 20 of them, but you don't get 20 of them, you would have to get more. There's money to be made in business. Listen out, folks, someone please do this, that buys these things in bulk and then sells the individual ones, like Lego minifig sites,
yeah, the folks that do that,
but with other toys that buy them all in bulk, open them up and see what's in them, and then just sells them individually for a wee bit more. Someone do it, please.
At the start of the pandemic,
remove the loot box element.
At the start of the pandemic, when I was like, do I really want to do this fucking games journalism pish? I was considering getting into the...
Before you made the wrong decision?
I don't know. of getting into the business of buying like big box, like loads and loads of Pokemon cards and scalping them, essentially. And I wish I did, because right on that crest of the wave, people made so much money over the pandemic on Pokemon cards, and I didn't bother. And I was just sitting fucking... I was about to say making banana bread, but that's a cliche. I never bought from Mars. I just sat and drank and played FIFA.
Just ate bananas and bread.
So I don't get it. When does it become like this cake-like substance? Anyway, our fourth story of this week. The Nintendo Switch successor faces backwards compatibility challenges, a developer has suggested. The Nintendo Switch successor could face difficulty implementing backwards compatibility, according to new analysis by respected content creator and Night Dive Studios developer Modern Vintage Gamer, MVG, for those in the YouTube know. In a newly published video, MVG digs into the possible components for the new Switch and talks about the incompatibility between the legacy hardware and how that could go forward to the Switch. It's essentially to do with how the games are compiled. So if this is a quote from MVG, if Nintendo is to move away from the Tegra X1, which is the chip it currently uses, which we all feel strongly that they will probably do, current Switch games won't work on new hardware without recompiling the games to target that hardware. Essentially, for Nintendo Switch games to work on this new theoretical Switch, which feels weird calling it theoretical because it's obviously happening, but we just don't know what to call it yet, they would have to have a software emulation layer, or do something like just include a Switch slot, or like include the chip from the original Switch on the Switch 2, which would also force them to use the same cartridge format for the Switch 2. I go to you, Nintendo editor Chris. What do you think of this? What do you think the actual solution will be? Because surely they're not going to fucking get rid of all the Switch library?
I think the solution will be what they've done before with the Wii U and with the 3DS, and I believe with the DS, was that they did one of those options, which is basically putting a completely separate kernel, if that's the term, inside the system. Because when you put a Wii game in the Wii U and start it, the Wii U physically shuts down and loads a Wii instead. It's basically two consoles in one. And if you put a DS game in a 3DS, it physically shuts down and opens up a DS, like kind of basically a DS inside a 3DS. Now, what this comes down to is how expensive the Tegra X1 is still going to be by the time this new system comes out, because that's basically what it boils down to, is how much of that Switch price is the Tegra X1. And all the kind of the internal components that would need to be copied over, that like basically lifted and placed inside this new system as a second system inside it. Because if that to me sounds like the only way it's going to be doable, and it would also, Nintendo might fancy that for security purposes, because at some point someone's going to hack the Switch wide open, like even it's already been done to older stuff, but at some point someone's going to bust the entire thing wide open, like always happens with Nintendo systems. And having the Switch mode as a completely separate thing inside it would be beneficial for Nintendo from a security point of view, because it would mean if anyone does ever manage to break the Switch wide open, this Switch 2 or whatever the new system is going to be called would be unaffected, because it's two completely separate systems in one. So my guess is they're going to do it. They'll put a Switch cartridge slot in it. They'll have to carry over the Switch Online legacy, all the retro games, all the digital games. They'll all have to carry over, because they've seen too many ups and downs over the years. It's been like a proper wave machine, like how well Nintendo systems have gone. It's rare that they get it right twice in a row, and they can't afford to fuck this up. The Switch has been its biggest success in such a long time. They have to just do more of the same.
Wouldn't it be so Nintendo to fuck it up, though?
It would be, but there has to come a point where they go, wait a minute.
Like, come on, lads, please.
Everyone's expecting us to fuck this up, but wouldn't it be so Nintendo to surprise everyone and not actually do it this time and actually do it right? It has to be. This retro library, these literal libraries are doing, they've taken so long to do them, they must know they're playing the long game. They've only just brought out Game Boy and Game Boy Advance, what, 5 years into the Switch's life. If people want GameCube and stuff in the future, or even I don't even know, like the Wii U had DS games and they've not even gone anywhere near that yet.
The fact that I cannot pick up my Switch and buy Pokemon Heart motherfucking Gold and play it. I know that there's a two screen problem. I do not care. Fix it. You are paid a lot of money, Nintendo. I have paid you a lot of money. Come on now.
There's a two screen problem, but people have solved that two screen problem with various shenanigans. So it can be done.
Right, no one's listening to this on the back end, right?
Right.
If I can play that game, right,
mm-hmm,
on another handheld machine, right? I'm doing the eyes thing here.
PSP,
yeah, the PSP. if I can play that on the T-Mobile Sidekick with no problem, and it runs brilliantly.
That's the thing. I mean, everyone knows you can play it on the N-Gage, so there's no real reason why it can be done. I mean, let's face it.
Nintendo knows it, because they take down videos of people playing it on the N-Gage, so it's not this big secret. Stacey, what do you think of this? Nintendo Switch games in the bin?
I'm not going to pretend to understand all of the technological settings as much as Chris does, but I think from a perception, from like public perception, there's going to be a lot that hinges on, is this essentially a Switch Pro, a better version of the Switch that play runs games better, as fast, I can support more things, in which case I think people will be they will demand really that all the Switch games need to work on it. Mm-hmm. Or is it going to be a Switch 2, a completely new console, a kind of PS4 to PS5 style leap, in which case I think people would have a little bit more forgiveness over some games not being carried over straight away. It's in kind of a similar way to the Steam Deck, didn't have every game verified immediately, but they will expect a much more powerful console out of the bag of that. I think because Nintendo games don't drop in price, a lot of people, this might maybe be a games journalism bubble thing, but a lot of people that I know buy digital because you get it immediately. It's the same price. It's never going to drop in price.
Unless your Tesco's going out of business and you can get all these games on Fiverr like happened last month. Never anywhere near me. There was like one, that the Mario Brothers Switch Deluxe Mega Dub Edition, that one was cheap, but the ones that you would invest in, the ones that you would go and buy 40 copies of, like the Pokemon games, all sold out. But yeah, I don't know what you mean. Like, the optics of coming out and being like, your Switch games aren't going to work, I'm sorry, it would be like disastrous. But
I it's a weird one because the consoles and the handhelds have had a very different path in terms of backwards compatibility, and I don't know if that's because handhelds are considered more casual, like they appeal to a wider audience, like parents buying them for their kids, and are likely to be more angry that the games don't work on the new one. Because when you look at NES to SNES, no backwards compatibility, to N64, no backwards compatibility, to GameCube, nope. It was only when the Wii and then the Wii U, they both did it, and that was it. But look at the handhelds, you could go from Game Boy to Game Boy Color to Game Boy Advance to DS to 3DS, backwards compatibility the entire way, all the way up. The Switch was the first time handhelds didn't do it. So it's not like it's unlike Nintendo to have backwards compatibility on a handheld. It's just they would be... Nintendo's done a lot of insane things over the years, and as someone who's worked on the official Nintendo magazine and had to deal with them for 6 years, they've done a million more insane things that people don't know about. But it would be the ultimate insane move to pretend the Switch is the end of that run and start from scratch again. That would be ludicrous.
Also, just finally on this, people don't remember how badly the Switch reveal went, and when they came out and said the controller was £70 and all of this stuff. Like, go back and look at like the early 2017 when they did that presentation, when they were like, the GameCube had a handle. Like, people were fucking hating on it, and it turned around. So never count out Nintendo, although you could count out Lego Disney and Lego Guardians of the Galaxy. Our final story this week: those games are reportedly among several cancelled projects at TT Games. This is according to Nintendo Life. Lego Guardians of the Galaxy in the bin. A Lego Disney title that would feature a lot of animated characters. Project Marley, apparently, which would be Frozen, The Muppets, Winnie the Pooh, Nightmare Before Christmas. These characters would be exploring Diablo-like dungeons, according to the report. A non-LEGO shooter featuring Warner Brothers characters, all the folk that are in Multiverses, that game that five people are still playing, that's also been binned, and apparently they are currently working on a LEGO Batman, and the LEGO Batman one is almost certainly confirmed because an ex-TT Games employee basically posted on Twitter being like, oh, all these reports of LEGO Batman, looks like TT Games is really leaky these days. It's like, mate, you've just
leaked it, you just confirmed it.
You left like 5 minutes ago, you've just said that this is happening. And also Skywalker Saga, a fied version of the Lego Harry Potter games. So Chris, as someone like me who's played a lot of these middling games, are Lego games a busted flush? And before you say it, yes, we should bring back Dimensions.
I'm glad you said it, not me, because I keep saying it and I feel bad. Like, if this camera was rotated 180 degrees, you would see a full Lego Dimensions collection and a full Disney Infinity collection choking up there with emotion. how much I love these games. So the idea of a Lego Disney game merging my love for Lego Dimensions and my love for Disney Infinity, and putting it in a Minecraft dungeon style game, which I don't care about, would have been quite interesting. But yeah, I have zero interest in another Lego Batman, if that is indeed what's in the works. I like the Lego games. I've always liked the Lego games. Again, now that I've got a kid, I'm looking forward to her getting kind of efficient enough with a controller that I can play Lego games with her, and I'll go through all of them except for Harry Potter. But Lego Dimensions is the one for me that I wish they would just go back to. I appreciate that there'd be a lot of work involved in renewing all those licenses, because not all the licenses were Warner Brothers licenses. That was the big deal.
Yeah, like Simpsons and Sonic and that.
Doctor Who was in there, the Back to the Future was in there, E.T., the A-Team. There's a million ridiculous things in there.
For the kids.
Oh, the kid, who else is up there? The kids love a bit of Beetlejuice.
If it's the musical, the musical's huge on TikTok. If they're going to do a Lego Beetlejuice the musical, I could see them doing that.
So they say. But the problem with Lego Dimension is so many people don't realise. I'm sorry, this is going into a Lego Dimensions like praise.
Stacey, we'll fuck off, right? Let him just.
did either of the two of you play it, or am I going to be preaching to like people who go doing
that? There's like a £700 Lego Millennium Falcon above my baldy head. Of course, I played Lego Dimensions.
But were you properly? Did you like get all of them? Were you into it like hook, line, and sinker? Or did you just pick and choose the ones you wanted?
I picked and chose the ones that I wanted, and then towards the end, I just bought the figures and kept them in their boxes, and eventually sold them because a lot of those minifigures were exclusive, yeah. and they were that was the best thing about Lego Dimensions. It was just Lego. It was actual physical Lego that you could use in your fucking sets or whatever. So yeah,
and for me, I think because it was toys to life, which is there's a phrase we've not heard for a while. A lot of people didn't obviously get it, and a lot of people literally didn't buy it. But figuratively as well, didn't get it because they didn't realise that what that game actually was a standard story mode, and then every single IP that was involved in that game, any time you put a toy down, unlocked an open world for that specific IP. Yeah. So there was it basically turned into a Lego Simpsons game, a Lego Powerpuff Girls game, a Lego Adventure Time game, a Lego Back to the Future game, that Lego A-Team game that the kids were fucking screaming for. it's amazing. I love a crossover. Like at the worst of times, I'll play anything that puts two characters together. This is the greatest crossover game.
I mean, you are Johnny Multiverses, of course you love a fucking crossover.
I stuck with Multiverses as long as I could, but I'm done with that now. But
you're the last player.
Yeah, it was the ultimate. People all go about Smash Brothers. Smash Brothers isn't the ultimate crossover game. Lego Dimensions is the ultimate crossover game, and they need to just bring it back without the toys and just like the gold edition.
Well, they're absolutely never going to do that, but. But just finally, as we record this, it is the 9th. You were potentially listening to this on the 9th. Tomorrow is March 10th, Mario Day. There's going to be a Lego live stream where they're going to announce a new Mario set. Divorce the fact that it's a Mario set, and I want a quick answer because it's my fucking day off and I'm not sitting in this office any longer. Chris, dream Lego set to be announced in the gaming universe. Stacey, I'm coming to you next, so give me a good answer. Chris?
Put me on the spot here. Dream one would be... The first level in Donkey Kong.
Oh, like a side scroll
as
like
a big construction.
Oh,
yeah, that like as a big construction, you construct this.
Okay, that's a good answer.
And with a magnet at the back, where you can move Mario from the back.
Oh, I like that. I bet that I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they actually are. Have you just broken embargo? We don't do that over here.
Imagine if it was, I'm going to look like an absolute arsehole.
Okay. Stacey, your dream Lego gaming set?
Then Croft Manor from Tomb Raider. Ideally from Legend, but I would take any
that's
of them.
That's a good one. That's strong.
That is nice. Actually, I couldn't really think of one until I looked behind you on the camera, Stacey. I think a Lego Normandy from Mass Effect would be fucking tidy. I love Lego spaceships, so I think for audio listeners, Stacey has an image of FemShep from the cover. Is that from the cover of 3? Or is that from the... I think it is.
Yes, it is, yeah. The reversible cover of 3, because you could flip them to have FemShep or AmbroShep on the front.
I would like a Lego Normandy. I think that would be pretty tidy. But the way Lego's going now, it'd probably be about £1 billion, because that new Lego Rivendell set's like £500, but... they've got us by the short and curlies. Send us your dream gaming Lego set and we will make fun of them next week. podcast@videogameschronicle.com. If you send me a set that's already been released, I will block you and abuse you on Twitter. Stacey, where can we find your work?
You can check me out at thegamer.com, where I'm the editor-in-chief. That's The Gamer with no spaces.
5 spaces. Chris, where can we find you?
Where can't you find me? I'm on Twitter at Scully1888, which means half of Glasgow don't like me. And obviously, you can find me on Video Games Chronicle. Again, no spaces.
Glasgow is famously green and white. That game last night was absolutely turgid. I mean, for us to play badly and still win 3-1, Celtic are fucking massive. Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to the Video Games Podcast. Can't cut that out. It's right at the end. Thank you very much for listening. True. You can follow me on Twitter at Jordan Midler, as Chris said, at Scully1888, and Stacey at 5Tacey. 5 spell out, because it's like the number 5 is S.
That's right.
And then Tacey. Next week, we will be back with what I am sure will be a very, very leaky episode looking at the guest list, so please look forward to that. Until next time, say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Say goodbye, Stacey.
Bye, Stacey.
And I will see you next week.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.